listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, where we're dedicated to awakening the world to the power, importance, and mastery of human emotions. You know, today, most people are informed about child sexual abuse. We know it happens, we have ways to report our suspicions, and we have therapeutic protocols for helping people to deal with the trauma of their abuse. And all of this is good. But do we really help abuse victims to heal? Or do we accept that a person sexually abused as a child will forever be a psychological and personal mess? My guest today is here to talk about healing from abuse. Please post your comments and questions on our blogs, which can be found at emotionalpro.com and on blogtalkradio.com/FPL. And remember, you can sign up for Full Power Living's broadcast through subscription on iTunes. Carla Van Ray is my guest today. She migrated to Australia in 1950 from the Netherlands. She was a Catholic nun until age 31 and left the nunnery and became a sex worker. Both life choices were based on early sexual abuse. Her memoir, God's Call Girl, became a bestseller in several countries. Carla has resided in Western Australia since 1980, where she's worked as a teacher, an author, and a spiritual mentor. She's a mother and a grandmother. You can find her on the web at carlavanray.com. That's C-A-R-L-A-V, as in Victor, A-N-R-A-A-Y.com. And Carla Van Ray, welcome to Full Power Living.
Oh, thank you, Eileen. What a beautiful introduction.
We're talking about a real topic close to my heart. I just want to start by saying I'm absolutely delighted to encounter your message about our ability to heal from sexual abuse. I've been a therapist for 44 years, and I was the victim of sexual molestation from my father, and I have been able to heal myself and go on. And so I resonated so strongly with your own healing and your message and your approach. And I also totally agree with you that the real road to healing is to do what we might call thinking bigger, to view the whole thing from a spiritual perspective as well as physical and psychological.
Absolutely.
Tell me your take on this.
If the picture isn't big enough, if we don't stand back far enough, then what we are dealing with is what goes on in our emotional self, what goes on in our minds. And we use our minds to try and heal ourselves. We try to understand what we're looking at or what we are feeling. And that is never going to do it, because our understanding in the first place has become faulty on account of the experiences of abuse. So it's the mental part of us that has been wounded, and the emotional part that has been wounded. We have to stand further back to the part of us that's bigger than the mental self and the emotional self, and ask for the spiritual side of us to come in and give us a different perspective, because from that perspective, we become much more effective. We actually tap into the part of us that can do the unconditional acceptance of all that we are, of how we are in the moment. It's not possible, I don't think, to do that otherwise.
I agree with you on that. I'd just like to insert here, too, as I was reading your book, many people that I work with came to my mind who weren't actually sexually abused, but they were intruded upon and disrespected as children. And I kept thinking, I want them to read this book. So even if a person who's listening, even if you're listening and you weren't sexually abused, if there was any level of abuse, I think your book, Healing from Abuse, really is helpful, Carla.
Well, thank you for saying that, Eileen. That's absolutely true. And actually, there are very few of us who do not get abused. Because, you know, when we have parents who put us down, who treat us in a way that destroys or attacks our self-esteem, then that is a form of abuse.
Yes. there are a number of things that we need to, and I think most people don't think about it, in order to heal from childhood sexual abuse. And I'd like to talk about a few of those. Interestingly enough, today I offered your book, I suggest your book, to a person I was working with who had a mentally ill parent and was an only child, but totally squeezed out. The childhood of this person was squeezed out by the mentally ill parent. And the person burst into tears when I suggested the book. And the reason the tears came were because this person did not want to be reminded of all the terrible things that they had gone through.
Yes, well, that's very understandable. That's true for all of us. We hate being reminded of how we felt at the time when the abuse occurred. The problem with healing, as you know, Eileen, is that we do try to live life on top of all these emotions, on top of all these nightmares that we have from day to day, and we get used to living that way. But we can't heal from that denial, space of denial, and I don't want to feel space. We cannot heal. We can only heal what we are prepared to feel. Now, that's of course, is the big question. How can you afford to feel those terrible feelings? Because those feelings are extremely uncomfortable. Those feelings go to the core of who we think we are. So the way to be able to feel those feelings is through having a spiritual side, the unconditionally loving side, present with us. That's the part of us that can embrace all that, that's bigger than all those feelings and can embrace all that. That's why the book introduces is so strong about get to know your spiritual side. It's a side that everyone has, you know. It's just that we haven't, may not be used to be open to it, that's all.
It's also something that we get to be in charge of. We get to invite our spiritual self in. And so just in doing that, there's a level of healing. And another thing that you bring out so much in the book that I think is really important is that there is nothing wrong with us because we had that experience, that we need to remember that we were a child and that, and I have to say it this way, the so-called adults that were involved had the responsibility to violate our emotions or bodies.
Yes, well, that's right, yes. We were only children, and as children, we can come to some horrible conclusions about our responsibility in that situation, that we were at fault. We did something to attract this. We did something to make them do this. And we think it's loving, and we responded as if we believed they were loving us. We tend to blame ourselves. So those are very difficult emotions to come to terms with. All those were not true emotions. All those negative emotions are not the truth of us at all. But we do need to acknowledge them because they are there. And we need to love or embrace, learn to love all that. Well, allow. We can't sort of start off by loving those feelings. No, but we can allow the unconditionally loving part of us to do that for us, to do that with us. And because love, to me, is a choice. It's a choice long before it's a feeling. It's a choice. So we choose to love. I choose to love these feelings. You know, I choose to embrace these feelings. And we can say that from the space of our spiritually loving self.
I totally agree with you on that. In the early 90s, I wrote some books helping parents to teach their children how to work with emotions. And I did research on a booklet that was called Exploring Love with Your Child. And one of the resources I came up with said that love is love is love. So it doesn't matter if you're loving yourself or you're loving somebody else. What does matter is that you choose love. And I did that more than 20 years ago, and it's just been amazing how my life has changed. So you don't have to have been abused for that to work, but it really is incredibly powerful. I'm really glad you brought that out.
It is, yeah. It's a choice. We have the choice to love. Everyone has a choice to love it anytime. Doesn't matter what the feeling is, because all the negatives are just negative feelings. They are there, but they are not the truth of us. And yes, we need to love the unlovable. Need to learn. That's the whole process, isn't it, Eileen? To learn to eventually accept. First of all, accept this feeling. I think that neutralizes the horribleness of the feeling, and then learn to love it. And that's the healing part. We can choose to start the process anyway.
Another part that I think is really important, I've run into this over and over again. I totally believe, you use slightly different words, but the construct that I use is the world is a giant school, and we've all come here in order to learn and grow. And what I find with a lot of people is that they don't believe that it's possible to heal. Whereas when you look at it as a giant school, you realize that the whole system is set up so that you can heal.
That's exactly right. That's the whole purpose of the experience, is to go through it and heal it and then come out the other side as the person that has grown enormously from the experience. We couldn't otherwise grow the way we can except for the experience. And what I also remember is, what helped me a lot to remember is that the persons who abuse us or the persons who hurt us in some way, even unintentionally, they are wounded people themselves. When they were children, they weren't treated all that well. They've learned how to behave this way because of their own childhoods, their own abuse that they've never dealt with.
My father's mother and her mother were some of the original members in Oklahoma of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, which denied all sexuality and humanness around our bodies. And so I could see that that contributed to my father's experiences. But when we have these kinds of experiences, what we do as children, and we do this as adults as well, we construct stories to explain and help us understand our experiences. And that's a lot of what we need to overcome. We tell ourselves, it's my fault, I caused it, I enjoyed it. And then they move into beliefs. I was interested that you gave a description about being unable to have somebody look in your eyes, and I went through that in my early 20s. I was afraid that somebody could look into my eyes and see there was something wrong inside of me, and I didn't know what it was, but they could tell.
Yep, that's right. That's exactly right. Yes, it's because it's holding inside of this self-image, holding ourselves as something wrong about, there's something wrong there, that I did something wrong, and I am wrong, and I am bad. I went there to the deepest level possible of that kind of feeling, because I thought, as a Catholic girl, I thought that I only had the devil as a friend to speak with. He was the only one who could do anything for me, because I was that bad that God couldn't forgive me. Yeah, and that's right. So I was completely abandoned by God and the angels and Mary and so forth. So I had to live in terrible isolation with those feelings and try and cope with them. So I know how bad it can get.
Yeah.
And that, to carry that with you, it doesn't go away just because you forget about it. I wasn't fully aware of what I was feeling when I was afraid that other people would see me, look at me, look me in the eyes. I didn't know what it was.
Right.
That's right.
I remember meeting my therapist on the street one day, and I couldn't look at him because I knew he knew what was in there. And so what happens then is we get locked inside of ourselves emotionally. And part of the healing is to find ways to unlock ourselves. Would you agree with that?
That's right. And to know that the feeling of only I feel this way, that you're the only one that feels this way and nobody else could possibly feel this way, that is another untruth. All those feelings are very, very, very common. There's no actually, I don't think there's any new negative feeling at all in the world. They've been just being recycled millions and zillions of times. They're all the same. All those feelings are actually quite common and normal for abused people to hold inside themselves. It's just a question of allowing them to come out, to acknowledge them, and to, and not to be afraid of them.
And so you assert in your book, Healing from Abuse, a Practical Spiritual Guide, that our entire world and us, we're all energy. And emotions are energy. So when we allow ourselves to get locked up in these ways, what's really happening is that we've stopped allowing our energy to move into, through, and out of ourselves in certain ways. And what are some of the consequences that you've observed for blocking this energy?
There are lots of consequences, aren't there, Eileen? When you are alienated from yourself in that way, then you can't possibly really connect with another person. I lived isolated from my own siblings, from my parents. I didn't connect with any of them really, even though I was the eldest of a lot of children. And I went into a convent to a convent where the nuns weren't allowed to speak to each other. We were isolated there. But this is the kind of choices I made because they belonged to my psyche, to the way I was feeling. I didn't, in my relationships, I didn't really deeply, intimately connect with others. I was just holding an image in front of me, really. And then with the whole of life and with my inner, most wonderful, loving self, I wasn't connected with any of the spiritual, true spiritual reality. So it's the consequences are really very severe and very wide-spreading. But what that means, Eileen, is that when you do break through that, you get all those connections. You start having all those connections, and it's a wonderful experience.
Right.
It's
and that's
more wonderful than anyone could have.
after being deprived of it for so long, it's really fantastic. So we're up to our first break here. I'm talking with Carla Van Ray. You can check her out at carlavanray.com. That's CarlaVanRaay. And we're going to talk about the role of forgiveness in healing the wounds of childhood sexual abuse coming up here on Full Power Living.
Difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
So welcome back to Full Power Living. Our topic today, healing from abuse, with my guest, Carla Van Ray, who's a spiritual mentor, author, and teacher. We'll get back to more questions after these announcements. First of all, please visit emotionalpro.com, where we have my free list, The Signals of 7 Everyday Emotions, for you to download. When you know these signals, that removes some of the mystery about mastering your emotions. For example, when you know loneliness results from having more energy going out than coming into yourself, it becomes an easy matter of doing things that bring energy into you to dispel the loneliness. And those are the kinds of things you can find out from that list. Also, sign up to be on our mailing list so that we can send you our biweekly newsletter telling you about our programs. Next week, I'll be talking with CNN's grief expert, Russell Friedman, again. This time, we're talking about just how much grief we human beings can take as individuals and as a nation. Be here at 9 a.m. Pacific time, which is noon Eastern, next Thursday for that discussion. Russell is always interesting. And thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through understanding the importance, mastery, and power of human emotions. You do this when you listen to our programs and especially when you share them with others.
I'm talking today with spiritual mentor, teacher, and author Carla Van Ray about her second book, Healing from Abuse. Carla, I wasn't able to read your first book, God's Call Girl, in which I believe you've told more of your own personal story of abuse, which happened at the hands of your father and began at age 3. And so would you take a little while to give us a bit of your story so that we can understand more of what you have learned about in healing?
Right, okay. Yes, that book covers 64 years of my life. And as I was writing that book, which took 15 years to write, by the way, between beginning and end, as I was writing, I just then became aware of the abuse that had happened. I didn't realize it until well in my 40s that this was happening. My life choices, as you mentioned in the beginning, they were based on abuse because becoming a nun for me was the answer to not being able to cope with life. I did not have my feet on the ground. I was just so intensely involved with the emotional turmoil inside me that I wasn't practical enough to face life. Couldn't think possibly having a relationship or anything like that. Going into the convent was the safest thing for me to do. At the time, of course, I wasn't aware of my motivations. At the time, I thought I had a vocation. So, and I was sincerely going in there, sacrificing my life to God. Yes. So, and that was an essential experience because from having that experience, I delved as deeply as I could into religion and came out of it the other side, knowing that I would never have to experience being a religious person again. Yeah, I completely understood what religion was trying to do, and it wasn't what I was looking for, you know, because it's based on producing a lot of fear and a lot of guilt, and in itself, that can be quite abusive. You know, there is such a thing as religious abuse, hardly ever recognized, but anything that makes a child fearful, anything that makes a child feel very guilty and destroys its self-esteem or attacks its self-esteem, its good feeling about itself, that is abusive. Going into the convent was also a way of just not having to deal with my sexuality, just make a vow of chastity, easy, you know, you don't have to think of sex anymore.
That's interesting.
Course, yeah, it's interesting, but it didn't work because you still take your sexual body in there, and instead of developing healthy relationships, sexual relationships, what happened with me was I just became enamored of a nun. I was completely and utterly obsessed and infatuated with her. For 3 years, this was the agony of my life. I describe all that in great detail in my book, all the life of convent life is all there. So that was only there because of that frustration and because of the unnatural lifestyle. Later on, I met up with her, and she lives in Manchester in England, and it's all been resolved, you know, all that. But it was it took a long time. It took many years before I actually did do that. So when I came out, I didn't know anything about sex, love, or relationships. When I married 18 months after coming out. I wasn't in love with the person that married me. He was in love with me. And my mother said, well, that's the best you can do. The Hollywood, you know, tells you that about love stories and all that. But it's not true. This is a good man. So marry him. So I did. But then a couple of years into the relationship, 2 years into the relationship, I met up when I was 34 with a 19-year-old who was new to sex. A beautiful young person. He was new to sex, I was new to passion, but we were together for 2 weeks. This was just an irresistible attraction. And then he said goodbye. He went back to where he was working in the mine somewhere. I didn't see him again for a very, very long time. Not until after the book was published, actually. And then he came back into my life. But that experience of very passionate, innocent sexuality, that opened up my sexuality. And I wanted to explore it after that. And I thought, I really need to find out about what sex is. You know, what is this? And I couldn't do it within a relationship. I couldn't do it, honestly, by staying in a relationship or asking someone else, you know, to. So that's why I became a prostitute, to experiment with my sexuality, to find out about the world of men, the world of business, the world, really. I knew nothing really about the world. And I was very lucky that because of my high motivation to do some good for my clients, that I was very protected and I attracted only very nice people to come to me. Yeah, for a while, because there came a time when the nasty side asserted itself. Yeah.
That's really interesting, because during my growing up years and part of my father's rationalization for why it was all right for him to molest two of his daughters was he saw us as the daughters of a prostitute. And that's part of what I was told my whole life. So you went into prostitution and I went, no, no, never. We're not doing that sort of thing, you know. Which shows what happens with the messages you get as a child. So one thing I want to bring out here, and I know you talk about it not in exactly this way in the book, but children of both sexes are sexually abused. And often it is one of the things that's so confusing about the abuse for a child is that it can be a parent or grandparent or another family member whom the child loves. I've, over the years, had difficulty explaining to people, yes, my father was my perpetrator, but he also was a man I loved because he was my father.
Yes. Well, that's true. Yep. Very often the father is the person closest to the child. I know of people who were abandoned by their mother and brought up by the father, who fed them, you know, clothed them, changed their nappies and did everything for them, and then terribly abused them as well. So it's highly confusing, highly confusing.
Right.
That's right. And so,
now, you were talking about how naive you were, and that was something I wanted to bring out too. One of the things, like with my husband, for example, who lived in the same house and had doting parents and so forth, whereas not only was I separated from my mother before I was three, lived in boarding schools for a couple of years, was molested, but my father was in the military and we moved all the time. And I would share a story or something with my husband, and he would say, well, I would just have done so-and-so. And I would say to him, number one, that never occurred to me. And number two, I didn't have the power to do that. You have no idea how powerless you feel when you're a child who's been sexually molested or injured.
Yes, that's right. That's right. You're automatically powerless because you don't have the capacity to stand back and evaluate what's happening to you.
That's part of what we need to heal then. We need to become powerful, correct?
Well, we need to become, in a way, we need to become the parents for this little child and recognize that this little child is still inside us with all its feelings. That is what is still inside us. The feelings we put up with, the feelings, the awful feelings that the turmoil inside us, they all belong to that little child. So we as adults have the capacity now to start healing, to start loving this child, to start taking some notice of it, and to know that the feelings we are having, they are not us. We are not those feelings. That's what the big turning point for me actually was. That there came a time when I realize that I have emotions, I have these feelings, but I am not these feelings. They don't actually tell the truth about me. They're not who I am. I'm not actually like this. I have these feelings, but I'm not like this. These feelings belong to my little child, and it's time for me to embrace this child and to embrace these feelings.
When I was 37, my second marriage ended. And I was standing in front of the mirror in my bathroom one day, and I remarked to myself out loud, you know, I didn't feel good about myself, but I remarked out loud that I said, you don't look so bad. And I had the voice in my mind that came back and said, for the daughter of a prostitute. Yeah, and then I thought, wow, because by then I did have a spiritual way of looking at things. I said, wow, that's a very intense thing to give to myself. I wonder what I might be trying to teach myself by having that whole issue. And the voice shot back and it said, it sure would teach you to be humble, which humility to me means remembering that there's something larger than myself, which is what spirituality is all about for me.
Well, yes, it's humility is one of those things that are very badly understood, because I grew up as a Catholic child thinking that humility meant being humiliated, you know, and that being humiliated and being put down was bringing about humility. But of course, that's not true. Destroying a child's self-esteem is not making them humble, it's just destroying them. But humility is actually recognizing the greatness of who we are, the beauty of who we are as beings on this planet. But that humility comes from a spiritual understanding and appreciation of ourselves, the larger truth. I think if you see the larger truth, then that is humility, I think. It's appreciation of ourselves. That's nothing to do that's not egoic or negative ego. It's just recognizing the truth. Hey, it's wonderful.
Amen.
to be human. Yeah.
That's great. All right. So there was a point in my life, I think I was 34, 35 years old, where I suddenly came to understand that my entire life up to that point had been about rejection. I was either being rejected, getting over being rejected, or getting ready to be rejected. But you, in your book, you talk about rejection, betrayal, and abandonment. And I must say that I had all of those just as powerfully as I had rejection. Tell me a little bit about how they come into being for a child who's sexually abused, and what can we do about them?
Yes, those are the most common feelings, and those are the most difficult ones to deal with: feeling abandoned, rejected, and the only thing that can be done about it is to be willing to feel those feelings and embrace them, knowing that they are not the truth of us. They're the feeling of the child, and they are so real, and they have such an influence on how we experience the whole of life, that it's important to feel each one of them as deeply as possible. Go there with a lot of courage, because once they are completely faced and embraced, then we can come out the other side, but not before that. We can't talk ourselves into not being abandoned. We can't talk ourselves into not being rejected. The mind can't do this. It's only the very loving heart that can do this.
I did finally realize that my parents had not actually rejected me at all. They were just so busy with themselves, they didn't even think about me. And strange to say, that was comforting.
That's right, Eileen. Oh, that brings up the whole realization that I had quite a while ago, that we children, we make up our minds what our parents are doing to us. We make up our minds whether they are lovers or not. From some of the experiences we get, we don't realize really how much they do love us, actually love us. You know, otherwise we wouldn't even be here. They loved us enough to bring us up in some way to make sure that we survived. but they weren't able to cope with their own problems a lot of the time. We forget that our parents are just human beings who unlike us in our days, did not have the capabilities that we have to deal with their emotional selves. You know, they had, their psychology wasn't even there, never mind the spirituality. They didn't, you know, they just did the best they could. So, yeah, but apart from that, I think apart from the rejection that we did receive from them and the abandonment we received from them and the betrayal feelings we got from them, it's what we do to ourselves after that. It's what we actually betray ourselves a lot of the time. We reject ourselves. We abandon ourselves. That's what we do. We do this. And actually, we are continuing the abuse for ourselves. Never mind, you know, that our parents did what they did. Yes, they did. Our abusers did what they did. But after that, what we do to ourselves is what we need to look at.
I had for a long time believed that there was something that I had done, possibly in another lifetime, that was just an unforgivable thing. And I had tried to forgive myself or to ask God for forgiveness. And I was explaining it to my husband one night. And I realized that I also have a belief that God is ever equal to our understanding. And the God of my understanding is a totally forgiving, loving God. And that's when I realized that my deciding that this thing was unforgivable, what I was actually doing was putting myself above God. I was saying, well, God could forgive me, but I know it's not forgivable. And that's when I could break through.
Wow, what a realization. You know, because
yes.
You became aware that's a negative, your negative ego, what I call a negative ego, trying to persuade you, you know, that you're not forgivable. Wow. So that's humility, isn't it? To accept the truth of that. Wow.
But I think what you're pointing out is that everything gets all mixed up. It's like if we didn't have the interruption of the abuse, we might be able to put more of these pieces into place. But with the interruption of the abuse, things get kind of turned upside down, and we don't really know which direction humility is, or we don't really know that we're good in our hearts, so we don't really know how to connect with something bigger than ourselves. It really does turn us upside down.
Yes, it does. It's difficult to live without having that clarity. But, you know, you can ask for clarity. That's the kind of prayer that's easily answered. You know, I believe in asking for what's needed because why not, you know? Ask for the clarity.
Yes. That's one of the things I most value in your book. You have all those quotations. I want to take them out and hand them to people I work with and say this to yourself every day. Ask for this every day. They're wonderful. I really like those little prayers and requests that you put at the end of almost every chapter.
Yeah, great. Yes, that's right. The book is a big encouragement. You know, I feel that people who've been abused going on to the healing journey, they need a lot of support and encouragement. So I can go through that journey again with a reader, with a person who is on that journey, and I love to give that encouragement. You know, when we talk about forgiveness, there's something else that occurred to me that I learned about the forgiveness bit. When we don't forgive ourselves, of course, we can't forgive anyone else. That's a big thing. We need to forgive ourselves first. But the thing is, there's actually no need for forgiveness because the God we talk about, the all that is, the creator, or, you know, where we have our, the being in which we exist, let's put it that way. We all have different names for what that is. That was never judging of us. It doesn't know how to judge. That is completely positive. It never has judged. There is no need for forgiveness. And that might be hard to understand if you're brought up like a Catholic, as I was, and that God has judged us and that we can only be forgiven through the death of his son and so forth, that might sort of go against this. But the larger truth, however, Jesus was motivated in doing that wonderful act of his. The larger truth is that we were never judged. There is no judging God. There's only a loving God. There's no need to forgive because we are actually always forgiven. We are never judged to begin with. Nobody is. Nobody is judged.
Forgiveness is an act of letting go so that we're free to start over again. So I'll hold on to that part. But I agree with you on that. You know, we're up to our second break, Carla. I'm speaking with the author of God's Call Girl. We're talking about her second book, Healing from Abuse, A Practical Spiritual Guide. And when we come back, I want to talk about gratitude and also how we keep ourselves motivated to fully heal from sexual abuse. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
How would you parent your child if he or she were a foreign exchange student? As a host for an exchange student, you'd have 5 main jobs to do. Those are the same 5 jobs important in raising kids. People around the world have used this approach to raise kids who are self-directed, make great decisions, and are immune to peer pressure. Get your copy of the Exchange Student Model for Parenting, written by me, Eileen Dillon, now available on Kindle. As a 41-year marriage and family therapist, a single, married, step, adoptive, and grandmother, I've got a thing or two to tell you that's going to lighten your load as a parent and help you create incredible kids who will become amazing adults. Go to Kindle.com and download the Exchange Student Model for Parenting today.
So welcome back.
In case you're just joining us, I'm talking today with Carla Van Ray about healing from abuse. She's been telling us that it is possible to heal from abuse and not just to apply Band-Aids. So, Carla, before we dive in again, I know you have a blog and an online course as well as your books, and we know that your website is your name, Carla Van Ray, CarlaVanRaay.com. Is that where they can find all the information about your course and get your books? Tell people how they can connect with you.
That's right. Going to my website is probably the best thing to do. Everything is available from there, including signed copies of my book. The book's also available via Amazon. And via my website, you can also just go on my newsletter and receive a newsletter every week. That's fun. Just to keep up communication.
So let me get into this. The issue that soul might have requested or needed the lesson of childhood sexual abuse. I resisted this one for a long time, I think in part because it meant I couldn't be a real victim. But I can see that once I followed the suggestions that were given to me for being grateful for the experience, that the sexual molestation brought some amazing benefits to me. And you talked about benefits you received also. Can you talk about that a couple of minutes?
Oh, yes. Okay. I think gratitude for the experience is probably not a starting point for most people, but it's something to aim for, to have in the back of the mind, because when you get there, everything changes once you get to that point of gratitude. It takes a lot of understanding before you can come to that point. But in my course, what I do teach people from the very beginning is to develop a muscle for gratitude, to look around and to find something to be grateful for and to increase all the aspects in your life for which you can be grateful. And we take so much for granted. But when we start this habit of gratitude, I think this starts something in us that takes us away from victim consciousness and it takes us away from ourselves. It takes our energy into, I think gratitude is actually a high form of love. That's what it is. And love being healing, I think gratitude has a healing quality to it. To start being grateful for something, anything, for having a bed to sleep in, for instance, you know, and might even be a cozy warm bed to sleep in. So having water, nice water to drink or food to eat, or having someone in your life that likes you, you know, doesn't have to love you, but someone that talks to you, you know, likes you. Anything at all for which to be grateful, that to grow that is a healing process. It's a wonderful starting point.
You say to heal means taking back the power to love and to receive love, which is the great purpose worth living for. And it is this love, you say, that will restore self-worth and self-esteem from the ground up and from the inside out. I really like that statement. Now, I'm interested in emotions. We deal with in child sexual abuse, especially we deal with fear and anger and under the anger, hurt. What perspective do you take on these emotions? How do you suggest people work with them?
Right, that's a big question, Eileen. Those feelings, you're talking about those very difficult feelings. Fear, of course, is a word that can cover a lot of other emotions. Underneath that fear is a lot of turmoil that has a lot to do with self-image, self-rejection, self-abandonment, the feeling of betrayal, and so forth. So how I have dealt with them is after sitting on top of them for the longest time and that not working for me, when I realized that I was not my emotions, I had emotions, but I am not my emotions, I was able to start feeling them. And that was a very uncomfortable process. I sort of was with myself when I went through those feelings, but it's like a very rough energy letting those feelings go through you and out of you. Those emotions are energies that sit in your physical body. I discovered they sit in your physical body until you release them. And as they are released, they can feel like rough, like, you know, electricity moving through you. But if you keep breathing and staying with it, not repressing it, just allowing it to be there, allowing it to leave, then they eventually do leave. They eventually do. And then I discovered that after a while, I came back to the same point, seemed to come back to the same point. There was still this feeling of abandonment, this self-rejection, but it wasn't nearly as severe as before. It wasn't that I'd come to the same point, really. I'd gone a spiral, more like a spiral, coming back above the same point. And every time I did that releasing process, more of a layer, if you like, just left. It's a process of letting go and letting go and letting go more and more over time. It doesn't happen all at once, but just allowing that to happen. And to choose, I think in that process also, what was important for me was to choose what I did want to be there instead. Because when that leaves, there is a gap there. There is something, there's a space there. And so that's the time to choose the love self, to let the love come in, to let the love come in. The universe is a loving being. So let the love just pour into that. I feel the love coming from my own heart now to pour into that as well, you know.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah. There came a point in my life where I realized that I had shoved power away because I felt that my father had abused power and I didn't want to have anything to do with power. But I also realized that until I claimed power for myself, my life wasn't going to work. So I had to go through the process of determining for myself what power really is. And I came up with the notion that power is nothing about having over anyone else. It's about having power with myself.
Yes, the power to rather than the power over.
Yes.
Yes, the ability, and, the ability to choose, the ability to do.
And so that's what we're aiming to release the feelings, to recognize that there's a larger mission of learning, to love ourselves and know that we always have been loved, that this is just part of the learning situation, and then to empower ourselves by loving ourselves, allowing love to come into our hearts and to flow to other people, and by getting in charge of ourselves, like setting boundaries or telling people what we want or what we don't want and that sort of thing. Is that a fairly good summary?
Well, it is. And understanding a little bit about energy and how to keep our energy field clear and how to have energetic boundaries, I think that's quite valuable information to have, so that you keep a clear space around you and you declare that you are only open to unconditional love. Yeah,
yes,
you're open to
I
unconditional
like that.
Love. But not you're not open to being abused. You're not open to anything below unconditional love. You let it flow from you, you let it flow to you. But you have this boundary, this energetic boundary of unconditional love.
Wow.
Such,
that's so nice.
Yeah.
Well,
you can do,
your
I do this
message,
on a daily basis.
Yes, and it doesn't matter if you were abused or not abused. That's a fabulous thing to offer to yourself.
Yes.
So your message is so valuable because not only do you offer people specifically what they can do to improve their lives after they've gone through childhood sexual abuse, but you also give the message that this process can result in healing. And to me, that means we might be able to show someone our scar, but the scar no longer causes us pain or embarrassment or shame. And I want to thank you for writing this book, Healing from Abuse. It's a really good book. I'm intending to get several of them to pass around to people that I know will benefit from your kind and loving approach.
Oh, thank you, Eileen. That's really beautiful.
So thank you also, Carla, for being with us here on Full Power Living today. It's been a very enlightening experience talking with you. Thank you.
Well, it's been a privilege. Thank you very much, Eileen.
So remember that Carla's book is Healing from Abuse, A Practical Spiritual Guide, and her website is carlavanray.com, C-A-R-L-A, V as in Victor, A-N-R-A-A-Y.com. And join us live every Thursday, 9 a.m. Pacific and noon Eastern Time, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. And remember that next week we're exploring more about grief. We have had so many tragic events, bombings, shootings, loss of favorite personalities, natural disasters. Lately it seems like every time we turn around there's another tragedy reported in the news. So Russell Friedman will be here to talk with me about how much loss can we take, as well as sharing how to process our feelings and grief when loss occurs. That's next Thursday, so listen in, and even more importantly, invite your friends and family and be ready to ask any questions you may have. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media is our producer. Thank you, Paul. And
for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.